This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. Robin Dow is producing, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. Emails are sent to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Mandy Landry, the state representative from the great city of New Orleans. And, of course, she is one of the few white Democrats remaining in the Louisiana legislature. Was reelected, as we know, in a somewhat contentious fashion, but she is one of the few voices from the left that is still around in the Louisiana legislature, which is now ruled by conservatives, mostly Republican conservatives, including the governor of Louisiana, Jeffrey Martin Landry. And 7 months and a few days into his first term, what do you make of where we are right now, Mandy Landry, and good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, as usual. I have to say I am glad to be back in my home 7 days a week and trying to work and seeing my family after those pretty much 5 months spent solidly in Baton Rouge. This year was really tough. I know everyone says every year is worse than the one before, but it was really tough. It just felt like every day, you know, the fire hose analogy, we were just barely kind of keeping up, and the special sessions and just a lot of, you know, this legislation, instead of having 5 or 10 crazy bills to deal with, it was 20 or 30. So, you know, the governor got pretty far this year, probably not everything he wanted. The Senate put some stops to certain things, but he got pretty far on his agenda.
Well, and he pulled out his veto pen a few times, I know, including on at least one instance on a measure that you saw through the process, which, as you know, is hard to do, particularly for a Democrat. What happened?
Yeah, I had 2 bills vetoed. This is the first bills I had vetoed all this time. One, I would say it was 50-50, expected or not, about artificial intelligence. I know there were some concerns about constitutional issues, which no other state seems to be concerned about but here. But I had heard those concerns. And the other one was really took me by surprise because I had been told it was going to be signed. It was about holding some of these bad actors in the campaign finance world accountable. Your listeners may notice sometimes you get these sort of anonymous or semi-anonymous attack pieces or just kind of bad stuff at the end of a campaign. And the bill was aimed at pulling some of that in and received unanimous support. And it was vetoed. So not really sure why.
Well, obviously, when a governor changes, we have a difference of philosophy if it's a change, and it has been almost every time in the last 50 years, mm-hmm. going from Republican to Democrat to Republican. But Jeff Landry, I think it's fair to say he has a different approach to matters than John Bel Edwards, a person that you cross swords with, but there is a different philosophy, shall we say.
Oh, I mean, from head to toe, of course. Well, you know, I think we'll wait and see what happens. Hopefully there won't be a bad storm this term, but there will probably be something to see how the governor handles it. But, I mean, they're very different. Governor Edwards had, I would say, a smaller agenda with a few big items, healthcare, education, you know, depending on the year. And it seems like our current governor, sorry, it's hard for me to say Governor Landry when that's my name, too.
There are a lot of Landrys in high positions now.
I know. It's hard for me to say it, just hearing my own name. but he had a wide agenda. There was redistricting, you know, the congressional and the Supreme Court, and there were other items about elections he wanted in that session. And then the criminal session was just bananas. All the different policies passed then. And then the regular session, there were a lot of culture war issues, but then there was public records issues and education. And it was just a very long list of what he wanted to get done. And I would say he got a fair amount.
877-217-5757 is your number for Mandy Landry on Talk Louisiana. and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Hal in Monroe asked a question about a story that was front page in the Advocate and Picayune a few days ago, and I pulled it up, about lawmakers promoting bills that benefit their industry, and noting that Heather Cloud, Republican from Turkey Creek, who owns a trucking company, sponsored a law to reduce how much companies had to pay in certain permit fees. And this practice is not unique to her. So is this something that is a valid concern?
Yes. I mean, we see it or hear about it. For example, you know, that example, I mean, I probably voted on it and didn't know. You probably just hear, oh, these, you know, this is really too much, or the fines are this, or it's easier to do that on a lot of these issues that I mean, I don't own a trucking company or know anything about it. And then you find out much later that there are some members who have direct interest. Some of it we hear over time, like nursing homes, people who have interest there. Some of it is broad and vague. Like, there will be bills that might help or hurt attorneys, which is like half the legislature, and it might be kind of vague. Like, there are bills that help plaintiff's attorneys. I don't do that kind of work, so it doesn't necessarily help me. And then there's when there, some people are pretty bold when they're at the table asking for something, and they say, well, I own a such and such, and I think if we did such and such, it would be, you know, so much better. And there's just not a lot of shame in some people.
Again, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org for Mandy Landry. And another listener, Tom on Blue Bonnet, asked about the tax situation. And next year, of course, that will be the major focus, with it being a fiscal session. But what about the point? Tom asked about what about the 0.45% sales tax that's set to roll off? Is this a recipe for disaster, or can lawmakers and the governor work around it?
My gut is that it will stay, but it's going to be an arduous process with everyone blaming everyone else. And I think it's going to be a big deal, because, you know, the Republicans don't like taxes, but they're the ones in charge, and they need the money. Mm-hmm. It was different than when Governor Edwards was asking for this money. And sales tax also are, I mean, someone like me, Democrats don't love them either, because the sales tax I pay in a store is the exact same amount of money as, you know, a single mother with one job, or I guess I'll say with two lower paying jobs pays at the grocery store too. Mm-hmm. Sorry, let me retract that. You don't pay taxes on groceries, but that's actually something they want to change. So you might be paying it. We have exemptions on food and medicine and some other items now, and there's been talk of adding those in. So maybe instead of keeping the half penny, they'll add taxes on food and medicine, which I think will be highly unpopular.
James and Harvey. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mandy Landry.
Good morning, Ms. Landry. What is your opinion on, I've just realized that I can't have anything as a citizen put on the, to be elected. So what is your opinion on having abortion being put up to be voted on?
All right. Well, we've had those kinds of votes in the past, excuse me, in Louisiana, James, but there was an effort to do that again this time, and there doesn't seem to be a stomach for it in Louisiana, but in other places like Arizona and Florida, it is a huge issue, and those are red states. What do you think, Representative Landry?
Right. So I think what he's asking is, do we have a ballot initiative process or a public referendum? About half of all states have them, where if, you know, you and I team up and go get, you know, X percentage of signatures, right, whatever it's set by, and we can put something directly on the ballot. What we do not have that here. I was the most recent politician to try to get that in our Constitution. Governor Foster tried, David Bitter tried, Jay Darden tried, and the special interest groups absolutely hate it and killed it, because the public would make very different decisions than they would. Abortion being on the ballot a few years ago was,
I know people point to it, but it wasn't the way it was worded. It was going to pass, like, with flying colors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of constitutional amendments really depends on how you word them.
And so, it also was before Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Exactly. Yeah. Which we know opinions in even Louisiana have changed, for sure.
Patricia in Baton Rouge. Patricia, you're on with Mandy Landry.
Hey, good morning. There's a new leadership in the Democratic Party in Louisiana, and I was wondering if you think that will improve things for Democrats. Thanks.
All right. What about the new leadership in the Democratic Party in Louisiana?
Yes, and I think it's started to already. We do have a new committee chair, but also what some people may not realize, the...
Hold that thought. We do have to take a pause, but we'll pick it up when we return in short order with Mandy Landry. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Mandy Landry, state representative from New Orleans, and then it's Andrea Gallo, one of the best reporters in Louisiana, now coming up on 10 years as a reporter at The Advocate and Picayune. Mandy Landry, as we hit the break, you were talking about the Democratic Party in Louisiana, which right now has no statewide elected officials. But is there hope, based on what you see, that your party will do better in the years to come?
Yes, there's a lot of hope. We have elected a new chair. Our last chair was, just disastrous. Our new chair is a former representative, former military man during Katrina, Randall Gaines. He has been, off to a quick start. And what a lot of people don't know about is the state Democratic Party has something called the Democratic Senatorial Campaign, Democratic State Central Committee. I'm sorry, there's all these acronyms.
Yeah,
Democratic State Central Committee. And that is comprised of two people elected from each House district in the state. So it's kind of like the legislature of the state party. And we have a lot of new people who were really mad about what happened last year and in several years and ran to change things. And they are already kind of, shaking things up. It'll be a minute. We have to recruit people. Everyone talks about voter registration, but it's also about candidates and getting candidates to run and getting them ready for certain offices. So I feel pretty good about it, but don't expect it overnight.
Let's go to James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Jim and Ms. Landry. Ms. Landry, a question for you. What are your thoughts on the immature and dumbed-down statements of our governor telling people if they don't like the laws of Louisiana, they can just leave, and if they don't like the Ten Commandments on the walls of our public schools, then they don't have to look at them? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James. Representative Landry?
Well, I think those responses don't fit the constitutional arguments or legal arguments. You can't just tell someone not to look at something if it shouldn't be there under the Constitution. The far right plays to different people in a different temperament than what many of us are used to or what many of us would say. So I think many of the people who elected him, and I don't know if I would say enjoy, but that's what they're looking for, and it doesn't work for me. Our party didn't elect him, but I don't like saying that someone should just ignore something that may be illegal or unconstitutional. I think that's definitely not the response you should be giving.
Well, in fairness to Governor Landry, I think he was saying the same thing in a much harsher way that former President Obama did when he said elections have consequences. When you win an election, I guess you have to assume that people are with you on most of the issues. And Jeff Landry, I know a lot of people don't like what he does, but they had a chance to vote him out, and only 35% of the electorate showed up.
So. He won. I see a lot of people even on my side, only X percent of the people in the state wanted him. I said, that might be true, but that's true of any elected official, and that means you need to get people to vote. And people who vote make those decisions, which is why some people are trying to really push voter disenfranchisement. Because if you have fewer Democrats, fewer people who are minorities voting, you get a very different government. So those go hand in hand. Mm-hmm.
And it's similar to those people who defend former President Trump on his claims of vote chicanery, election chicanery in 2020. Many of those same people were elected on the same day. So if it was screwed up with the presidency, it was screwed up in every other race. So be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, truth and facts and things like that, you know, don't make sense. I mean, I'm sure I'll get emails on this, but there are people who are denying January 6th happened. You know, just denying basic facts, things that we saw with our own eyes. And the election stuff, there's just no credible evidence that any of that happened or didn't happen. It's just completely made up. And it's how do you argue with someone who just believes something?
Well, how do you see the national election now, 81 days out? A lot's changed since the last time we spoke.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, upside down. I'm going to the conventions, first time I'm going, I'm super excited. And I was going before the switch up, and I was still excited. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But when 24 hours happened, when Biden stepped back and endorsed the vice president, I mean, it's been magic. People are so excited. The younger people are excited. She is just an entirely new presence that former President Trump just, it seems like he can't deal with her. He can't bully her or make fun of her in the same way he was trying to do with President Biden.
And his vice president made the statement about her that she and others in the Democratic ranks, childless cat ladies, that one hasn't played well either.
No, it's because it's a stupid insult. I don't know where that insult or whatever came from. I mean, first of all, she's married. I think it's, you know, it's very sexist that women must be this, that, or the other, because if she had six children too, they would be talking trash about her not being home with her six children. So it's just a typical of what's thrown at women in general. And you're right, like, that's not landing. I mean, fewer people are having children nowadays. Fewer people are getting married because of divorce rates. Life is just very different than it was, you know, a couple decades ago for women in particular.
Mm-hmm. Well, quote yesterday from Donald Trump in his press conference, "I don't have a lot of respect for her intelligence. I think she'll be a terrible president." Now, that's a Freudian slip.
Those are just words from him.
There you go. Rebel in Baton Rouge, please be concise. We're going to try to get in two more calls from Andy Landry. Rebel,
Hi.
You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, thank you so much, Jim, and thank you, Ms. Landry, for the work you're doing. It's definitely appreciated. As you have pointed out with Jeff Landry, it's always going to be culture wars and corruption. And they use the culture wars to hide the corruption and distract from that. You explain how they are planning to raise taxes on the 99%. Could you please provide some examples of how they're cutting taxes and regulations on the 1%?
All right. Is that what's happening, or is that unfair for Rebel to make those claims? What do you think?
So I would say what he might mean is that that's being discussed for next year. We don't know yet what's going to happen. We're not going back. The legislature's not going back into session this year, but we probably will have a tax session next year. And there's a lot on the table. I mean, number one, he's right that corporations seem to pay almost no tax here. There's lots of tax exemptions. But then there's talk, like I said, of doing away with grocery tax exemptions and medicine tax exemptions. There's talk about removing the income tax and spreading everything out onto I don't even know, a property tax, a higher sales tax. I'm not even sure. There's talk about raising the homestead exemption, and there's talking about getting rid of it. I think his general point, though, that very wealthy private corporate interests will have a lot of say in what happens in a tax session. They will have more say than the average person.
All right. Jason in Baton Rouge, please be brief. Jason, you're on with Representative
Okay. Bradley. I just had a question. Just had a question about the general atmosphere of the legislature. Is it with the members of the opposite, you know, party? Is it hostility or is there a camaraderie?
What is it? Is it somewhere in between or is it fraught with danger?
It kind of depends on who the people you're talking about. There's not so much hostility. It's kind of resignation on our parts. We know what's going to happen. We have to make our arguments and try. I am routinely disappointed in many Republican members because I know they are not voting their conscience or their district. There is, like you said, camaraderie. There are quite a few I consider good friends. There are Republicans who left after last term who are good friends. And then there's people that you just know, like, there's just nothing in common there.
Well, Representative Landry, always a pleasure. Have a good time in Chicago at the convention, and
I'm sure we'll
be calling for an update. We're back after this. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WRKF Baton Rouge and WWNO New Orleans, and your number is 877-217-5757. 877-217-5757. And Andrea Gallo, the investigative reporter for the Baton Rouge Advocate and the New Orleans Advocate Picayune. She is with us to talk about what's going on. Andrea's been doing her thing for the newspaper of record in Louisiana for a decade come October. Some of us remember her when she was editor of the Reveille. And at LSU, she bravely sued the university. And she also has the distinction of having been sued by Jeff Landry. And you won both times, didn't you?
Yes, eventually. The LSU suit had to work its way through the appeals courts first. But
both times it involved public records.
Both times the end result was that the records were released, yes.
Well, you had a story the other day that the governor is using something, and it sounds like plausible, but you say it's not in the Constitution, executive privilege in Louisiana. There is no executive privilege, is there?
That's right. We have taken a close look at how the governor's administration has been handling public records requests ever since he took office at the beginning of the year. And we've noticed that there are quite a few instances of them denying or withholding records, citing really two legal exemptions that I think are important to note. One is executive privilege. The other is deliberative process. Neither of them exist in state statute or the Louisiana Constitution.
So what does this mean?
Well, it depends who you talk to, but the legal experts we've spoken to say it means that Jeff Landry is breaking the law and that he's essentially staring down the public and saying, if you disagree with me on this, sue me. And of course, a lot of members of the public who request public records, they don't necessarily have the financial means or the time or the energy to get into a legal fight with the governor of the state.
Well, as a journalist, I'm always in favor of transparency to a fault. But there are those who believe that sometimes things need to be kept under wraps and that there's certainly a line that has to be somewhere, a boundary, if you will. I think Governor Landry, it's fair to say, is stretching the boundary in the other way because he has a much different feeling about this than I do and you do. But is it personal, or do you think he legitimately believes that sometimes things are better off not being out for public scrutiny, at least not at the time the media would like for it to be?
Well, these are issues that the state has grappled with for a long time, and a lot of politicians who have come before him have grappled with it. As I'm sure you remember, in the Jindal era, the state did have rules. There was a statute in state law saying that records that involved so-called deliberative process, meaning the decision-making process between Governor Jindal and his staff, were shielded from public records laws. But that presented so many problems and created so many controversies and created this feeling among members of the public that Governor Jindal's administration wasn't being open with them, that there was this real groundswell and push for a change to the law to do away with those kinds of exemptions. So the legislature changed the law and got rid of them, and yet Governor Landry's office is applying this exemption that Louisiana decided several years ago we no longer wanted.
Okay. Now, the governor, when he believes in something, he fights for it. And a listener notes that he's also trying to revamp the Ethics Commission. He definitely has a position on this that some would say is extreme, but he's going to test the boundaries, I believe. There's no doubt about it. Do you think he'll be successful?
We'll see what happens. I think it's important to note that the legislature did take up an effort this past year in the legislative session to create some of these exemptions in state law. And there was so much pushback from the public. It was so unpopular that the legislature didn't move forward with it. Of course, he isn't always going to do or agree with what the legislature does. But I think that tells you a lot about how little public appetite there is for laws that take away rights to review records. And at the end of the day, this will probably play out in the courts and we'll probably have a better sense of, where those lines are.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org as we continue our discussion with Andrea Gallo of The Advocate and Picayune. And Andrea covered the LSU situation when there were serious allegations and revelations of sexual misconduct, particularly in the athletic department. And this was before Scott Woodward became athletic director, but there was a trial and Sharon Lewis lost her trial. And Les Miles, for example, he has claimed total exoneration. I don't think that verdict was total exoneration for Leslie Edwin Miles, was it?
I guess it depends what lens you're looking at it through, but I do think it's important to remember that the group of students who filed a major lawsuit against LSU alleging Title IX violations, LSU settled that suit with them before it went to trial. So just because Sharon Lewis went to trial and lost that one doesn't necessarily mean that all of the allegations that came out around that time were not, validated somehow in the courts.
And Coach Miles paid quite a bit of money himself to settle this, didn't he?
From what we know, back in 2013, which is the time that all of this was happening under wraps, unknown to the public at LSU, he did pay a confidential settlement to an LSU student who had accused him of sexual harassment. Yes.
Now, these bills that were flying fast and furious in the legislature to limit media access and public access to records, public records. Stories like you unearthed about Coach Miles, I would think those would be in peril. Ray Nagin, for example, the New Orleans mayor, that was through a public records, several public records disclosures. Where are we now with this new world?
That's a great point, Jim. I think that if you are an engaged news consumer in Louisiana and you look back on the many, many scandals that have plagued this state, you can draw a direct line between how public records were involved in the public finding out. The Les Miles case, yes, actually it was USA Today sued to get a copy of the sexual harassment investigation into him. The Ray Nagin case, my wonderful boss, Gordon Russell, he did a lot of work with public records to expose what was going on with Ray Nagin at the time. The list is very long, and I think it continues to this day.
And LSU remains a place where often it's difficult to get information. And yesterday we had a discussion with Daryl Glasper, the former Baton Rouge councilman, about the secrecy that remains regarding this new arena that is proposed, and you did stories back in March and April on this, and the developers have not been revealed as yet. Why is this cloaked in secrecy?
That is a great question. As you know, LSU is a public institution. Some would argue that this is not the correct process that a public institution should follow to build something along these lines. It's even more kind of concerning that we now know that there may be taxes involved in this. There might be tax breaks through an economic development district. Public money will most likely go toward this project, despite LSU officials repeatedly saying that it's all going to be paid for by a private developer. So I think that begs the question, why hasn't there been more public scrutiny? And I recently requested the two RFP contracts or RFP submissions that had come into LSU for this because they were due in June. And I was told these are not public records. They're going through the Tiger Athletic Foundation, which is a private entity. So they've pretty carefully crafted this to try to avoid as much sunlight on the project as possible.
There, this is public land we're talking about.
We think so, yes. They haven't officially revealed the location of it yet, but assuming that it is on LSU's campus.
Maybe even on the golf course.
Right,
which
right.
Which would mean there would no longer be a golf course.
Yes, right. Assuming all of that takes place, this is, of course, public
but
land.
But none of this has been presented to the public. It's all conjecture. A listener, actually, it's happened the last two times we've discussed this, is asked about would there be any student fees involved? That rec center, which was $85 million. $85 million for that rec center at LSU, all on student fees, right?
I was one of the students who paid the fees for it, yes. Yes, and they hadn't finished it by the time I graduated, so.
And as a graduate, you don't get a free pass right. either. You got to pay fees to be a member, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful facility, but other facilities similar have been built for much less, and that was all done with student fees. And so I don't know what the motivation is. As Bill Clinton said when he got caught red-handed with Monica Lewinsky, why did you do it? He says, because I could. And LSU, in many cases, I think, does things because it can. It has the Tiger Athletic Foundation, which cloaks them from scrutiny. And this is something that's replicated all over the country. But is that a good way for the public to know what's going on at their state university?
There are competing thoughts on this. No, it's not a good way for the public to know what's going on. LSU, I think, would argue and has argued in the past that if you put too much sunlight or scrutiny on a project like this, that you don't get the cream of the crop in order to do it. I don't know that that argument really holds up, but I think that's their position on a lot of these sorts of things. So we'll have to see what ends up happening with this project. It is a lot of money, and it's going to be a, you know, substantial change to Baton Rouge if it happens. And certainly, I think a lot of members of the public would like to weigh in.
877-217-5757. Back a few more minutes with Andrea Gallo, then it's Barbara Sims. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Friday Politics on Talk Louisiana. Andrea Gallo, who covers all kinds of things for The Advocate and Picayune, usually in an investigative work. She is here, and we were talking about the governor, who I think it's fair to say does not like public scrutiny when it comes to unearthing public records, and he believes that it thwarts growth and things like that. And, of course, journalists generally don't believe that and don't accept it, and so we have a collision of thoughts as we are right now. But the governor has announced that he will launch Monday Gumbo 2.1, allowing for the distribution of $1.4 billion in funding to support broadband access throughout our state. And among those present will be Senator Cassidy and Congressman Carter. And they, of course, are not in accord with Jeff Landry, who was with the other members of the Republican delegation. He was not, of course, a member of Congress at the time, but they voted to overturn the election, all but Senator Cassidy. And Congressman Carter, of course, is a Democrat. So Landry, he's a hard guy to pin down, Andrea, because he certainly helped the Democrats with congressional reapportionment, and he irritated some Republicans when he went with the trial lawyers in a major piece of legislation. So he's not a cookie-cutter conservative.
That's right. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, now that he's been in office for a little while and we've seen a little bit more of him kind of making deals and passing policy, where he goes from here.
And I will say, unlike Governor Jindal, he does talk with people, and often with people who disagree with him, and that's a good thing. And because if you live in an echo chamber, you're not going to get a good result, I don't think. And that was proved with Bobby Jindal, who is a brilliant man and could have been a great governor, but he fell short of his goals, I think, even by his own admission. And he had it all. He had it all. He had a compliant legislature. He had two big victories. He could have done a lot of things, but instead he had one eye on 1600, maybe both eyes on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, even in this day and age, I'll interview, you know, people who work for the state, and they still talk a lot about the impact of things that Jindal did, and usually it's not in a particularly positive light.
Well, I look forward to having you cover Governor Landry, and we need to bring you back soon. And in 2 months, Andrea will be have been 10 years at The Advocate, and now The Advocate /Picayune. Congrats on your success, and keep going.
Thanks, Jim. It's always good to be here.
Thank you. And today is the 16th day of August, 2024. It was 47 years ago, about this time, that we heard that Elvis Aaron Presley, pride of Tupelo, Mississippi, who grew up in Memphis, made that town famous, and was the world's biggest star for a couple of decades. He died at the age of 42 at Graceland. And before we get to a woman who knew him and worked with him, Barbara Sims, back at Sun Records, here is Robin Dow with Elvis's last number one song.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say? Suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams on suspicious minds.
Great recording from Elvis Presley, and hard to believe, but when he did that, when he was only 8 years from death, he was a short life, 42, the same age Huey Long was when he was killed in 1935, and Bobby Kennedy was when he was killed in 1968, and Elvis Aaron Presley had most of his life on the world stage. It took a toll on him. I don't think the country boy from Tupelo handled a lot of the fame well, but he was a phenomenon, and it began in the 1950s. And at Sun Records at that time, he, of course, rubbed shoulders with Jerry Lee Lewis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Charlie Rich. But he also was associated with many people who worked there, including our guest, who's written a book about Elvis, Barbara Barnes Sims, the next Elvis, searching for stardom at Sun Records. And good morning to you, Barbara.
Good morning. And Barbara, thank you for having me, Jim.
It's good to see you. It's been a few years. But Barbara worked with Elvis, and she's been with us, and she lives in Baton Rouge. And you were there. You were on the front stage of history with all those greats, including Elvis Presley. Was he the one who you thought would be the chosen one? I think Jerry Lee Lewis feels like he got robbed, but Elvis was the one who was even more famous than Johnny Cash.
Well, I first have to tell you that Elvis had already left for service when I went to work at Sun. I started at Sun in 57, and he had his first release on Sun in 54 and started to become prominent in 55. And so my associations with him were sort of secondhand. I did work with his guitarist, Scotty Moore, and I knew a lot of the gang that ran around with Elvis. And, of course, I did meet him and had been aware of him before he became famous because I was from a small town in Mississippi near Tupelo, and he used to play the courthouse and other small, you know, venues in my geographical area. But Johnny Cash was the first star that I really worked with, and then Jerry Lee after that.
And you answered all of Jerry Lee's
fan. To some extent.
You answered all of Jerry Lee's fan mail, didn't you?
Right.
He got lots of fan mail.
Yeah.
And some hate mail, too, I think.
Exactly.
So what did you do when you got letters that weren't happy with Jerry Lee marrying his first cousin?
I'm sorry?
When Jerry Lee married his 13-year-old first cousin, did...
Oh, my goodness. I have to tell people that he's not my favorite son star, although I do recognize his talent. But the fact mm-hmm. that he used and his manager used poor judgment in taking his mm-hmm. young bride to England on tour with him was a great mistake from the public relations standpoint. And I feel in a way that with Jerry Lee's having kind of destroyed his career at that point, that he led to the downfall of Sun Records, because Sam Phillips came to feel that he was running a kind of a training ground for people that would come from the major labels and then make, bigger stars out of people that we had discovered.
Well, Barbara Sims retired from LSU after 36 years, and she has written a book, The Next Elvis, Searching for Stardom at Sun Records. It's in a second printing now.
Yes, and I'm happy to say that it's now in paperback as well as Audible and Kindle, and so there are a lot of ways that people can read mm-hmm. or listen to it.
Well, why did he have more staying power than Jerry Lee Lewis?
Elvis?
With the public. Yeah.
I think Elvis had a great deal of charisma, which certainly sounds trite, but there was something about him that was a combination of braggadocio and humbleness, and he was a little mischievous, the sparkle that he had in his eyes, and then he was a good singer. Some people at first thought he was not a good singer.
Prodigious talent. the talent was a big part of it as well.
Yeah.
But he ultimately, it was all but a suicide. He took himself out with abuse of his body.
Such a shame, really. There was so much more that he could have done.
At 42, yeah, yeah.
I saw his last concert here at LSU and was so distressed because I had seen him at his height, and then to see him deteriorate as he had mm-hmm. was very sad.
Well, you're a fascinating person too, and I hope we have a longer visit with you sometime soon. It's been too long, but there always are going to be anniversaries with Elvis on January 8th of next year. He'll be 90 years old wherever he is, and I have a feeling he is in a good place. But I've always had a special affinity as a son of the South, growing up in New Orleans and Little Rock with Elvis Presley. And the day I left Little Rock to come back to Louisiana and go to LSU, August 16, 1977, was the day he died. And the day I was born in 1958, he was in New Orleans filming King Creole, which he said was his best film.
That's what I understand. And he felt it was a more serious role than those that he was assigned in the future films, I think.
And the director was Michael Curtiz, who directed a pretty good film called John Word, Casablanca. So he did a great job with King Creole. And Elvis, all his movies made money. He was an amazing phenomenon. As we leave the stage right now, we'll go to Elvis Presley and close it out with him. And this was from King Creole, one of his biggest hits. Reached number one, Robin Dow.
Hard-headed woman, soft-hearted man, been the cause of trouble ever since the world began. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ever since the world began. A hard-headed woman, and a thorn in the side, oh, man. Adam told Eve, listen here to me. Don't you let me catch you messing around that apple tree. Oh, yeah.